Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with composer Hannibal Lokumbe. He was in town when the Philadelphia Orchestra premiered his work, One Land, One River, One People. I first asked him about his description of the piece as a spiritatorio.
Yes, it seemed to have been a problem for some people to describe the kind of music that I write and play. So I thought I would at least make an attempt to make it easier to do that. So I coined this term called spiritatorio, which means a form of art that uses music, visuals, and text to evoke a profound physical and spiritual response.
And it's divided into parts, which are called veils.
Yes, ma'am. Because sometimes we can move 5 steps forward in our understanding of something, and the next day fall 50 steps behind. But once a veil is removed from our consciousness, we're not only not the same, but that's an understanding we have. We don't have to relive that wisdom, that understanding. Veil is much deeper. It's like an enduring truth, an everlasting truth. Something is true 1,000 years ago, it's true today, it'll be true 10,000 years from now. So I equate that to a veil, to removing a kind of understanding. It's like, for example, when you come to understand that there's nothing that comes from violence but violence, that's a veil of understanding. You don't say, well, if I have to defend my country, yes, I'll do that. If I have to take someone's life, well, if you take someone's life, you're still a lesser human being. It's not a situation to have medals pinned on your coat. If you're put in that unfortunate situation where you have to defend your life or your family's life by taking someone else's life, it's certainly nothing to celebrate, at least in my opinion.
Could you talk a little bit about how this work evolved? Did it start with a story, with a place, with an idea?
It began with the spirit of my great-grandmother coming to give me my next assignment. She always gives me my next assignment. And when I see her in my mind, when she comes to me, her spirit comes to me, she speaks more in movements and actions than in words. And it has really been on my heart very deep to say what I say to the inmates when I go into the prison. The first thing I say to them is that I want you to see what I see when I look at you. And that's the living creator. That's the living God. And when they believe it, they change. The ones that believe it, they change. So I wanted to say that to the entire world. Not that I haven't been wanting to say that in all of my music, but I found myself really just aching to say it. And so my great-grandmother's spirit came to me, and she pointed to her head, her heart, her womb. She touched the ground and then held her hands to the sky. And then the text started to come. One land, one river, one people. We're all beneath the sky. The sky doesn't shine on a woman more than it does a man. It doesn't look upon a wealthy person more than it looks upon a poor person. It doesn't look only upon those who follow Islam or those who follow Christianity. It doesn't. That's our doing. Those walls, those categories, those fences, that's of our making. That's not a sublime, that's not a divine principle. A fence, a wall, is not a divine principle. That's a human principle, which leads to destruction and confusion and death and a lot of things we don't need, as far as I'm concerned. A lot of things that points away from the adage of on earth as it is in heaven.
Does the text run through the whole work?
Oh, yes. The text is the seed of the fruit. It's essential. Everything is driven from the text because the text came from her, what I saw from her. And then what I heard when she was in my presence, that's what the music is. That reflects the music that's heard.
So when you have these ideas that are embodied in the text, how do you decide how to orchestrate it? What sounds to put with that?
Well, first thing I try to do is find as much solitude as possible. I try to pay whatever bills I can as possible so I won't get those phone calls. And I retreat to the forest. And there's where I pray, I meditate, and I'm still, I'm quiet, and it always comes, thank goodness.
The voice is very important to you, the human voice.
First instrument there was the human voice, the absolute first instrument. And it's not just humane, because when I explain to the choir, as my great-great-grandmother's spirit taught me, they're not just notes you're singing. They have implications. They affect people. They have an effect upon people. So look at it more as you being a farmer and you're planting seeds into people. And what kind of seeds are you planting will determine the state of being of the people that the seed goes into. That's critical.
I've heard you tell a great story about going to Africa when you were, I guess, working on African portraits, and you discovered that a family had a violin, and the violin had been in that family for several generations.
Yes.
But the violin, they didn't use the violin the same way
right.
Western music uses a violin, and they had drums and didn't use the drums the same
That's
way.
That's right. The violin was used as a percussive instrument, and the drum was used as a melodic instrument, just the reverse. And I put that concept in African portraits. But this chief who owned this violin, they measure years by seasons. And he said it was over 90 rainy seasons old. That predates Pythagoras, you know.
So while speaking of this work, the One Land, One River, One People, I understand you created an instrument just for this work.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I speak a great deal in this piece about the new being. And the new being is a human being that is both male and female, almost androgynous. And what we have to remember is that we're still evolving. We're not going to look, if the human race survives for 20,000 years, we're not going to look the way we look now. And not only that, our minds are evolving too, not just our bodies. And for me, there are people who represent this level of spiritual and mental evolution that is a symbol of what humans as a whole will come to be. And Albert Einstein is one of them. The way he would think. So he's always been fascinating to me. Same with John Coltrane. The thought process, same with Beethoven. So these people have this very high level of thinking. It's like they're free in their minds. And most humans, unfortunately, are not free in their thinking. We all possess that divine spiritual intellect, right? But some don't have the courage to pursue it. But Albert Einstein, we owe so much to him. And so since the work has a great deal of astrophysics in it, like, for example, when Amma creates the earth, she tells Nomo, and Nomo in this sense is like Adam. Amma is the name for God in the Dogon spiritual system. So if you use the analogy of God talking to Adam, it might be clearer for many people. She tells Nomo, at the center of the earth, there beats a heart of fire. From this heart of fire, there's created an aura around the earth to keep the sun from burning all that was made to dust, the magnetic shield. See, that's Einstein. And that has to be respected regardless of what else you believe in, you have the right to believe, certainly. But you can't disavow the magnetic shield. The magnetic shield does not require that you believe it exists or not. If it didn't exist, we'd all be French fries. You know, so I paid homage to this great mind that to me represents what I mean when I say the new being. And in honor of him, I heard this sound in my head that I equate to the sound of the earth rotating on its axis. And I heard it when I was swimming in the Mediterranean Sea. And it's a crackle sound. It's not very treble, it's not very bass, it's between the two. And so I called this master sculptor, my brother Martin Payton, and said, Martin, I hear this sound. And a few days later, he called me back and said, is this it? And it's exactly the sound. And this sound comes right after the string section plays this form I call the blug, which is a fugue based on the blues changes. This entire piece is, for the most part, is in C minor. But at any rate, it happens right after the strings play this section, which is very, very intense, just like a black hole, right before it explodes. And right before the gamma ray burst comes, you hear Einstein's rattle and the piccolo. Then you hear the gamma ray burst.
So that's the name of the instrument is Einstein's rattle?
Einstein's rattle. Oh, I love it. I'm trying to figure out a way. I want to talk to the sculptor, talk to Martin, to see if he would sell it and sell it for a musician price, because somehow I want it to stay with the orchestra, you know. I want it to stay in the office of the symphony or something like that. I don't know, maybe try to get it as a gift for Maestro Jan. He's such a wonderful mind.
It's very cool. And the other thing that's wonderful about your music is that it incorporates so many elements that people sometimes associate with different kinds of music. Do you think combining what have historically been different styles of music, people talk about jazz, they talk about classical and Baroque and Romantic and African music, they talk about them as separate things, but they may be historical divisions, but putting them together reveals that oneness that you're talking about.
It's unfortunate when you start to divide, you know. That can get in the way of you coming into your universal self. 4 miles above the earth, the astrophysicists for some times have discovered a pitch that's 4 miles above the earth. And it's the same ohm, it's the same frequency all around the world.
Wow. You're very interested in the intersection of science and spirituality.
It's all the same. It's all the same. It's just like us. We're different spices, but we're part of the same bowl of soup made by the same chef.
Thank you so much, Hannibal.
My pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.